This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 1st of November 2024. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 1st of November. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: Austin's last home will open to the public, watchdogs' concern over prison violence, and the Archbishop and the bikers. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Nikki?
Which was Austin's last home will open to the public. Tours part of Arthur's 250th celebrations. Winchester tourism has received a major boost with news that the house where Jane Austen died is to be open to the public for the first time. The property in College Street, where Austen spent her final days, is being opened next summer. The house, 8 College Street, is owned by Winchester College and is where the famous writer lived shortly before her death on July the 18th, 1817. It has been a private residence let to a member of staff for many years. In 2025, the college is opening the building to tours between June and August as part of a celebration of the 250th anniversary of Austen's birth. It raises the question of whether the house may permanently be open to the public as a museum. The house will host an exhibition about Austen's life and Winchester, featuring a specially commissioned film alongside artifacts from Winchester College's collection. Tickets cost £12.50 and tours take place on Wednesdays and Saturdays from June the 4th to August the 30th. The college is also offering guided evening tours on selected dates. These include a tour led by Dr. Richard Foster, Keeper of Collections at Winchester College, a drinks reception in the garden of 8 College Street, and private dining in the college. A Winchester College spokesperson said, "Winchester College is very excited to open number 8 College Street to the public for the first time next year as part of a worldwide celebration of the 250th anniversary of Jane Austen's birth, which will take place throughout 2025. The house will be open for a limited number of days throughout June, July and August 2025. We look forward to welcoming visitors during the summer to explore the house where Austen spent her final weeks, and to learn more about Austen's connections with Winchester and the college. The news has been welcomed by other local Jane Austen institutions. Lizzie Dunford, director of Jane Austen's house in Chawton, said, "Here at Jane Austen's house, we are greatly looking forward to 8 College Street being part of the Hampshire-wide celebrations of Jane Austen's 250th birthday. As the place where Austen spent her last weeks before her death, it is an important part of her story, and we are so pleased that Janeites, both local and from across the world, will have the opportunity to see inside. 2025 will be a year filled with events, exhibitions and celebrations at JAH and across the county to celebrate Hampshire's greatest literary genius, and the opening of 8 College Street will be a particularly emotive part of the year." Katie Charles, CEO of Chawton House, where Austen's brother Edward Austen Knight lived, said, "We're delighted Winchester College is able to open 8 College Street to the public to mark Jane Austen's 250th anniversary. We know those interested in Austen will find the experience of visiting the place she spent her final days moving, and the wider story of Winchester College and the Austen and Knight families fascinating. We hope visitors from within and outside the county will take the rare chance next year to see inside all 3 existing Hampshire properties so connected with her life: Jane Austen's house, Chawton House and 8 College Street."
Watchdogs' concern over prison violence. A watchdog has called for Winchester Prison to be put into emergency measures amid concerns over very high levels of violence and drug problems. Prison inspectors wrote to the Justice Secretary, Shabana Mahood, to issue an urgent notification for improvements at the Category B jail in Winchester after very poor inspection findings. The watchdog reported that drugs was rife and that the prison's approach to testing was weak, and a third of the CCTV cameras were broken, which compromised security. Some 41% of the around 690 men held there were tested positive for drug use in August, and 47% reported it was easy to get hold of illicit substances, the inspector said. The prison, which also has a low security category C resettlement unit, was also so dilapidated one inmate had been able to remove his own cell door, the watchdog's inspection carried out earlier this month found. Drugs, debt and prisoner frustration led to the highest level of riotous assaults against staff in England and Wales reception jails, which process new inmates into the prison system and hold people on remand for who have been convicted but yet to be sentenced while they are taken to court. It also had the second highest rate for serious assaults against other inmates, while self-harm was at the third highest level of all prisons of this kind, according to the watchdog. Martin Lomas, Deputy Chief Inspector of Prisons, said, "Winchester was in a very poor state and had been for many years. At this most recent inspection, we found that the standards had deteriorated to a point that we had no choice but to issue an urgent notification for improvement. These very poor outcomes represent systematic failings under the oversight of the HMPPS, Her Majesty's Prison and Probation Service, and the Ministry of Justice, and it will require sustained support and investment if the jail is to provide decent living conditions, keep prisoners safe, and provide them with the skills they need to succeed in life outside prison." Inspectors also highlighted how prisoners were being held in dreadful conditions, with some cells so damp and mouldy that the inspectors questioned whether they were fit for habitation. Winchester is the ninth prison to be issued with the urgent notification since November 2022, joining Exeter, Woodhill, Bristol, Bedford, Wandsworth, Rochester and Manchester jails, as well as the Cookham Wood Young Offenders Institution.
And now for something rather different, and our third headline this week is entitled "The Archbishop and the Bikers." A motorbike show at Bracefield welcomed a very special guest, the Archbishop of Canterbury, the Most Reverend Justin Welby. The Custom and Classic Bike Show was held at Bracefield Social Club on Sunday, October the 27th. Dozens of bikers from across the area came to show off their bikes and meet with members of the community. Attendees could also enjoy tea, cake and drinks, as well as live music provided by the Riverside Concert Band. There was also a raffle and a bookstore, with money raised going to the Prostate Cancer UK. The Archbishop visited the bike show as part of his visit to the Winchester Diocese, which lasted from Friday, October the 25th to Sunday, and which has taken him across South Hampshire. The event was organised by Reverend Tom Benson, Vicar of Bracefield, who is a keen biker. He told the Chronicle, "There's a really strong biking community around here. When we heard that the Archbishop was coming to meet people outside of the church context, it seemed like a really good opportunity to put the two together, for him to meet the people and the people to meet him." Reverend Benson said that he hopes the bike show can become an annual event which brings the community together. He said, "It's really exciting. It's drawn people who are focused on bikes or focused on the church and put them in the same space. It's a really good thing." Paul Fielder, former chair of the Bracefield Social Club, said he thought the event will put the club on the map. And he said, "I think it's a great thing that the church and the social club have been able to get together and put such an event on. It's bringing in lots of people to the village. and with the great honour of having the Archbishop here as well, it certainly put the club on the map. Also in attendance was the Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Philip von Stephen, and he said, "I think it's all down to the fact that Tom, the vicar here, has a passion for bikes, but he also has a passion for people, and he has a passion for the good news of Jesus, and he loves to bring these things together in a way that is open and accessible. It builds community, and it turns into something that is good to come through. For me, this is no less church than the things we do inside the church walls." Speaking about the event, the Archbishop of Canterbury said, "I am gripped with fascination. I don't know anything about motorbikes, and I just think it's unbelievably interesting and really fun." When asked about his visit to the Diocese of Winchester, he said, "I've loved it. I think what it's reinforced for me, right across this country and this area, I've seen it very clearly, churches are partnering with others to look after people in the community and to build up the church and to let people know the love of God through Jesus Christ. And they do it without any concern about people's faith or non-faith or domination or ability." Actually, that's denomination or ability. "They've just come from a lunch where 75 homeless people were being served and looked after. It was just fantastic." And the article is accompanied by a whole series of photographs. There are several of the Archbishop of Canterbury there, and he's looking at the bikes, and he's chatting with somebody there who's got a, I don't know, it's a T-shirt or whatever, with "God Loves Bikers" on the back of it. And there's the Riverside Concert Band there, which are under a little bit of a marquee, keep them dry. And there's loads and loads and loads of bikes, so it must have been quite an event.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, then Christian comment, letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, First Person and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements this week. Ashenden. Margaret Joan Ashenden died peacefully at home on the 3rd of October, aged 84. Butcher, Rosemary Claire Butcher, died peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 16th of October, aged 89. Laming, James Edward Laming, who died peacefully at home on the 15th of October, aged 88. Longland, Norman Longland, died suddenly on the 15th of October, aged 92. Olek, Maria Paula Olek, died peacefully at Queen Alexandra Hospital, Portsmouth, aged 81. And Padwick, Valerie Padwick, died peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 19th of October, aged 83. Now, Andrew, we have Christian comment, please.
And this week's Christian comment was written by the Reverend Philip Crinks, and it's entitled, "I Enjoyed the Best View in the Church." One of the joys I had when preaching at St. Cross was the view. The congregation have their backs to the west window. I was facing it. And really, the west window is a sermon in itself. Its stained glass art alone makes the visit to the St. Cross Chapel worthwhile. The artist's aim is to inspire us to a deeper faith. The images emphasize the message of this season of the year, as we celebrate all the saints that have gone before us in faith. This is St. Paul's message in his letter to the Hebrews. Surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us run with perseverance the race that is set before us. Paul's list of inspiring witnesses goes back all the way to Abel. By faith, he was able to make an offering out of what he had, which was acceptable to God. Then there is Enoch, who by faith was able to live a life pleasing to God. And Noah, who by faith was able to hear God's word and find safety from the flood. These three are depicted at the bottom of the west window. Paul goes on to include Abraham and David, who are depicted in the top right. all these forerunners of ours faced many challenges. By faith, Paul says, they won strength out of weakness. So they are commended. But there was still something more which they did not receive. God's promises were not wholly fulfilled in their time. The window's artist knows this. That is why the central panels of the west window tell an additional story. At the bottom are the striking figures of Adam and Eve. They are naked, but with modesty just about preserved by the fruit of the tree of knowledge. Above them is the serpent, coiled in the tree, luridly coloured in red and yellow. This represents human fallenness. We know how we are imperfect. We recognise that we are unable to live the perfect life for which God created us. Above that panel is another, but with many lurid serpents. This is the scene in the book of Numbers. The serpents represent the curse of sin and rebellion against God. They have the people in agony. One serpent image, however, has been lifted up by Moses, a bronze image high on a cross pole. The final panel shows Jesus giving his life on the cross. For just as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, so must the Son of God, or Son of Man, be lifted up, that whoever believes in him may have eternal life. God has promised life in all its fullness to us who live in faith. And he fulfilled this promise in the life, teaching, death, and resurrection of Jesus. It is to him that we are to look, as the pioneer and perfecter of the fullness of faith. So God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, so that everyone who believes in him may not perish, but have eternal life.
Thank you, Andrew. And now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, please.
And this from Simon Lever, headed Road Problems. Whatever long-term benefits regarding the golf club's plans, short-term, in brackets 3 years, I'm wondering why M3 Junction 11 cannot be used for both unloading and the return journey instead of the B335 road, which would cause significant problems for Twyford and Coldon Common residents. On another subject, on frequent walks around Water Meadows, I used to pass the Handlebar Cafe when it was being constructed. Part of the building team were a Hungarian, a Polish, and a Romanian. I used to stop and chat with these enthusiastic builders who explained the construction technique used to replicate a railway carriage. I have vivid memories of tucking into an orange sponge cake drizzled with chocolate and an espresso coffee. The Handlebar Cafe's unique structure and accompanying menu is a magnet for walkers and cyclists. The South Downs Design Award is most deserved, and that from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Fair pay call. We are very lucky in this part of the country to have some truly excellent colleges for our 16 to 18 year olds, including two of the largest and most successful colleges in the country. So it will come as a surprise to many people that teachers within these colleges have not been awarded the same 5.5% pay rise that has been offered to teachers within schools and the academicised colleges. The government have been promised $1.2 billion to fund a 5.5% pay rise to teachers within schools, sixth form colleges and academised colleges. Sorry, that's a hell of a word to say. However, they have failed to include funding for the 40 non-academised sixth form colleges in the country, three of which are located in Hampshire and attended by many young people from Romsey and surrounding areas. Schools and sixth form colleges are state-funded public sector bodies, yet colleges receive 22% less funding than schools. I wonder if readers are also aware that despite their public sector status, sixth form colleges are required to pay VAT and are not currently granted a VAT exemption similar to that afforded to private schools for so long. Nevertheless, Sixth form colleges represent one of the highest performing sectors in education. With the number of 16 to 18 year olds set to rise, sixth form colleges play a vital role in increasing life chances of young people, as well as driving national and economic skills growth. After a decade of cuts from the previous government, including a 19% real terms pay cut, if we want our young people to continue to benefit from outstanding post-16 educational provision, it is essential colleges are treated in line with schools through the equal pay funding and respect. And that was from C. Reeves, Field Close, Romsey.
Hunt Parade. The news that Winchester City Council has given permission for a road closure in Arlesford Market Town for a fox hunt parade on Boxing Day, using the police as enablers and servants of this hunt to protect them from peaceful protesters and at a massive cost to ratepayers, is unacceptable. See the news story on page 7. It is clear that the closure of Station Road, which is completely unsuitable for horses and hounds to ride down, is to corral and prevent any protesters arriving by train access to the town, leaving the road both in and out of Arlesford controlled by police stop and search roadblocks. It is worrying that this arrangement has been planned in advance with the collusion of the fox hunt, Winchester City Council and the police in secret and behind closed doors. The possibility of public disorder and safety at this event is high, and it should not be allowed to take place, as there are plenty of areas around Arlesford where this hunt can display and enjoy themselves and their barbaric activities without causing offence or public nuisance to anybody. And that is written by Peter Sowerbury of Lavington Gardens, North Battersley. Now, there is, in fact, a letters editor note, and it says, the Watercress Line, the only railway in Arlesford, does not operate any services on Boxing Day, so it would be difficult for protesters to arrive by train.
And this one headed Stuck on Red from Tony Stevens. For the last few weeks, there have been roadworks in Worthy Road Junction, where Northlands Drive, Winchester, which apparently is the responsibility of Scottish and Southern Energy, S&SE. Operatives are rarely seen on site, albeit there is a set of traffic lights to control the traffic. Today, those traffic lights were stuck on red, all three ways, and with no one in attendance, drivers were having to judge whether it was safe to proceed against the red lights. A phone call to HCC after the usual 10-minute wait, whilst I was told about this policy and that policy, identified the utility, but nothing else other than a vague statement to the effect they might send someone out, but no time frame was given. This phone took more than 10 minutes, and when I was asked to identify the location, I was asked for the postcode, or alternatively my three words. Not easy when you don't live at the location and you're in town, even though I clearly identified the road by name and the location along that road. I then phoned 101, with yet another 10-minute wait and policy reiterations, before the operative said, not interested. It's an SS&E's problem, and put the phone down, even though the roadworks were causing an obstruction to normal traffic flow. Finally, I phoned SS&E, or S&SE, and after the required 10-minute wait and further policy reiterations, there was a problem with the location. I think this lady was located in Scotland, but that was eventually resolved and the report noted. Apart from the not interested, police, I did ask for a return phone call to tell me if the issue had now been resolved. It's now late afternoon and no phone calls. I believe that all these national organisations are no longer fit for purpose. They are self-serving and generally stepping back from direct interaction with the public through the use of poor quality call centres and long telephone wait times are deplorable. Employ more staff? They all claim it's quicker via their websites, but they are not easy to navigate even when you have desktop. These organisations are supposed to be serving the general public and residents in their areas of their control, but actually, they don't really care about the general public in the slightest. If, however, you infringe their rules and regs, then just wait for the proverbial ton of bricks to descend. And that from Tony Stevens, The Pastures, Kingsworthy.
The True Cost. It is once more the season of consultations, Winchester local plan station approach. When we were asked to endorse a series of unimpeachable aims, cleaner air, more active transport, more affordable housing, biodiversity, high-quality architecture, improved maintenance of public spaces, more jobs and revenue for the city. The next stage is usually that a specific measure to realise these aims are bitterly disputed because they interfere with the amenities or privileges of one or other group. And so, for the last 20 years, plans have come and gone in Winchester and little has been done. Democracy in action, perhaps, and I do admire the persistence and tolerance of boredom and bureaucracy of our city councillors and have no wish to join them. The underlying problem, it seems to me, is that we in a rich Western society have built ourselves into a web of interconnected systems in order to create a luxurious lifestyle that many people now feel they are entitled to, without accounting for the true cost of the technical and political innovations. Any attempt to mitigate the harms of our way of life is almost certain to be mired in objections. I should like to suggest a relatively simple measure that I think might move us in the right direction. Reduction in traffic levels is a key aim of any plan, and it's clear to all that the quality of life in the city is greatly reduced by the number of cars and HGVs on our streets. A congestion charge, which would initially at least be a modest sum, for each motor vehicle entering the city, might encourage many to consider other modes of transport. A higher tariff for HGVs could be used to encourage offloading onto smaller, less polluting vehicles outside the city and discourage the use of city streets as a through route. The revenue would ideally be ring-fenced for the improvement of park and ride and local bus services and the development of offloading sites. And that was from Dr. Nick Dennis of Worthy Lane, Hyde, Winchester.
And continuing our transport theme, this one's entitled Charging Points. I have been an EV, electric vehicle user, for a few years now, and I use a mixture of home and public charging depending upon where I am. The provision in Winchester is atrocious. There is a petrol station that has installed a charging point that is so difficult to access because of its position on the forecourt. Its access is also directly beside a blind entrance. That is a commercial opportunity, so one can choose just not to use it. The public charging in car parks is actually worse. More often than not, they're not working. The one in the old Friarsgate car park is surely there for decoration only, and I can't be the only person who doesn't relish using heavy, charged electric cables in a place where the puddles clear only on the hottest day. Water and electricity are not known for being great in combination. Four times this week, I have tried to charge. Twice at the East Park and Ride site. I get out, set everything up, use the QR code to the new provider, only to get the message that the device needed an engineer. The devices have been transferred from MER to someone new. Is that perhaps the reason for failure? One, not working is a nuisance. Two, looks like a problem. I then tried the MER at the leisure centre, and only one connector was working. The untethered device was already used. So that makes three fails. Today, I had to pop into town, and I thought I'd try the MER device in Colebrook Street car park. Silly me. MER relies upon internet for connectivity. There is no signal down there. I did try using the non-subscriber method. Here, one has to use a terminal for bank cards. It is set so low that anyone over the age of 2 would have to squat or sit on the floor to see the instructions. I made the mistake of being 6'1", so a fourth fail. I don't know who gets to be in charge of public EV charging at city centre car parks, but whoever it is needs to make sure that it is A, reliable, B, accessible, C, able to work without the internet, and D, use one provider, as there are already far too many apps for EV charging. We aim to be a destination city. That is yet more infrastructure that looks great on paper and is less use than a chocolate teapot. And that's from Peter Roberts, Honeysuckle Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. So now we move on to editorial comment, please, Nikki.
Which is headed, Doing Justice to Jane Austen at Last. It's good news that Winchester College will be opening up the house in College Street where Jane Austen spent her final days in 1817. In the past, it had not been possible as the building was the family home of a member of staff. They were regularly bothered by tourists hoping to have a tour of the property where their literary heroine died. They grew so frustrated they wrote a terse notice and placed it in the window. This is a private house and not open to the public, if memory serves. As the years passed, it faded, but the message was clear. Go away. Next summer, the house will be welcome to people for tours at £12.50 a ticket. It poses the question of whether it might be permanently set aside as some kind of museum in honour of one of this country's finest writers. Winchester is full of historic places that now frustratingly no longer exist. The cathedral was built on the site of two previous churches. Hyde Abbey, the last known resting place of King Alfred the Great, was largely demolished in the 16th century. Winchester Castle, one of the largest fortifications in southern England, was similarly dismantled after the English Civil War in the mid-17th century. Only the Great Hall survives, giving a clue as to its immensity. The first purpose-built hospital was in the city centre, long gone. The prison was in Drury Street, and now only part of the facade remains. The Jane Austen house in College Street was different, although the frustration over historical absence is the same. The structure is all there, but its story could not be told because of the staffing and domestic requirements of a large boarding school. Now it looks like there might be the chance for the city to do Jane Austen justice, finally.
Thank you. Norma, I think we've got first person, please.
I have indeed. And it's entitled Long Impact of COVID, and it's by Joanna Lewis. Can't stop for long this week. Sorry, dear reader. I'm very busy seeking reparations. It relates to catching COVID again. Initially, I wasn't bothered. It's just a cold these days, people said. The virus has lost its power. Not this strain. Nights turn to days and vice versa. High temperature, sweats, shivers quickly set in. Then Olympic coughing, headaches, sickness, and the two bob bits. You return to solids, but there's little to celebrate. You now have brain fog, tinnitus, chronic fatigue, and bouts of black dog. During this time, I became far too familiar with my bedside table for my liking. I now know its exact measurements, how many glasses of water, medicine bottles and honey jars it can host, alongside all the other illness paraphernalia. I learned the point at which the drawer will overload and fall out stuffed with cough sweets, biscuits and lavender sprays. Capable of only watching obscure Freeview TV channels, it's a miracle in my mental haze I didn't order a stair lift or become addicted to online bingo. I've also spent more time with Angus of the Yorkshire Auction House than is healthy for a middle-aged woman. But seriously, I lost days off of work at a crucial time, meetings were cancelled, deadlines missed, I've let people down. how many others are still unnecessarily being inconvenienced by the virus? We know now pretty much for certain where it originated from. It's the trillion-dollar virus in terms of what it cost, but no government seeks compensation. People are still paying the price for COVID, but why should we just accept this? There are those still living with grief from losing loved ones, those with long COVID, the unfortunate minority managing side effects from vaccines. Domestic violence increased during COVID and additions to online porn. What has been the long-term effects of the relationship between the two? Interpersonal skills and basic manners have decreased. Young people seem often to resent the elderly. Then there's the economic impact. The high levels of public spending during COVID are estimated up to $410 billion. That's $4,600 per person. Lockdown resulted in recession. Economic activity and productivity have continued to decrease. The Institute for Fiscal Studies estimate that the cost of education disruption could be up to $350 billion over the long term, across the lifetime of those affected. Living with monumental national debt, but continuing the habit of borrowing to expand the state sector is a deadly legacy for how we are governed. A bloated, expanded state, the blob, as some call it, is being taken to new extremes in sinister, spiteful, and desperate ways. Instead of tackling deep-set problems, one part of the state is mobilised to repress issues created by the state in another area, and so on. Civil liberties, as under COVID, are whittled away, the truth ever more deviously buried. Meanwhile, working people and those who have paid tax already on their incomes will be made to foot the bill. A worrying lack of spending reviews goes back to 2021. However, according to Full Fact, an independent fact-checker organisation, the current government's claim there was a hidden $22 million black hole in the country's finances is misleading. $9.5 billion of that figure comes from the public pay sector awards Labour made when it came into power. The third largest amount, $6.4 billion, comes from additional asylum and illegal immigration costs. At the bottom of the list comes additional health costs, excluding pay, $1.5 billion. What a convenient argument to justify raising taxes and a war on everyone over 65 who owns a black Labrador. Not just for the COVID virus itself, but for the model of the Maoist governance it has spawned, I'm suing Beijing for the compensation. Anyone got an address for the Chinese Communist Party? I could really do with a new conservatory.
Thank you. Belgarum, Andrew, you got an item from there?
There was a lot in your previous article, wasn't there?
Yes, it was.
There was a lot. It covered a lot of subjects, though. Right, Belgarum, an alternative look at the news. And this is a journalist's latest project. And this is quite close to home. The former Hampshire Chronicle chief reporter and author Warwick Payne has unveiled his latest writing project to coincide with the launch of his official website. The site, warwickwayne.co.uk, is now live and contains information about all his previous works. It also includes facts, including his favourite recipes, craft beers, live bands, and how he fractured his skull and survived to tell the tale. It also features his decade in newspapers, working as the Chronicle's chief reporter. He interviewed a host of politicians, including Theresa May and Nick Clegg, before entering the fray himself, serving as a Southampton city councillor for Woolston since 2007, and between 2015 and 2018 as deputy leader. He then went into public relations, but still chairs the council's health committee. Staying with politics, the new website includes a teaser for his upcoming seventh book, Town Hall, mostly a fiction, is due to launch in February 2025, and does to local government what Yes Minister did to Westminster. Whilst the setting and characters are imaginary, some plot lines are inspired by his time on the council and reporting on local authorities across Hampshire. Warwick said, "I've collected so much material on local government over the years that the only hard part was deciding what to leave out." And this is accompanied by a photograph of the of Wayne Warwick. Sorry, not Wayne Warwick, Warwick Payne. And he's looking very, very relaxed. He's sitting at his desk, is on the phone, got his feet up on the table, and presumably his seven books sitting there as part of the set.
Thank you. That concludes mid-articles. Now we move on to announcements. We start with what's on. And what have we got? Winchester Cathedral on the 21st of November at 7:30. The Winchester Philharmonic Choir Concert is covering Mendelssohn's choral masterpiece, Elijah. It's directed by Sarah Baldock, and the choir and the orchestra will be joined by Winchester College Choral Society and Chapel Choir. To book, call the Cathedral box office on 01962 857 275. That's 857 275. And on Tuesday the 5th of November, at 1:15, it's the lunchtime concert in the cathedral, and Hannah Sermely is playing the piano, works by Beethoven, Bartok and Granados. The Theatre Royal has three items coming up. There's a classic Bernard Shaw play due to hit the stage on I'm looking at the date. Oh, here we are. November the 12th and Wednesday, November the 13th. It's Arms and the Man, also known as the Chocolate Cream Soldier. The comedy revolves around Raina, a beautiful young Bulgarian woman with heroic ideals, who becomes embroiled in a love triangle involving a chocolate cream-carrying Serbian captain and her own fiancé. On the 14th, the day after that concludes, flamenco fans can look forward to a special performance. Echoes by My Flamenco will be staged at the Theatre Royal on Thursday, November the 14th, and the show promises a blend of emotive flamenco dancing and soul-stirring music. The performance is not just about traditional flamenco, it also includes an engaging film component that adds to the immersive multimedia experience. And then on Friday, November the 15th, Beatles fans can enjoy a tribute performance in Winchester. Beatles Complete, a tribute act formed in 2020 and 2021. The group, which regularly performs at the Cavern Club in Liverpool, will play classics like Hey Jude, Help, Let It Be and She Loves You. The band, praised by the Cavern Club as one of the most exciting Beatles tribute, is made up of four multi-instrumentalists. And if you want any of the details on those Theatre Royal performances, the details can be found on their website, or you can telephone 01962 840 440. That's 840 440. Now, lighting up time ends Friday the 1st of November at 6:59 a.m. and begins at 4:38 p.m. And on Wednesday the 6th of November, it ends at 7:05 a.m. and begins at 4:30 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 861 229. And this number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with items of general news. Nikki, please.
And this one headed, Christmas Market ranks among UK's best. Winchester Cathedral's Christmas Market has been named among the best to visit in the UK for 2024 as part of a new list. The Times pulled together 18 Christmas markets taking place in 24, which go into full festive overdrive. Discussing the creation of the list, the paper wrote, "The winter months bring a burst of magic to Britain's towns and cities, which go into full festive overdrive as Christmas markets open round the country. Streets and squares are transformed by spectacular light displays, and hundreds of brightly coloured wooden stalls filled the last minute with last-minute Christmas gift ideas. Join the party in pop-up bars and street food stalls to a soundtrack of carol singers and live bands, and fill up on festive treats when you're not riding a giant Ferris wheel or gliding round an ice rink." The full list of UK's best Christmas markets for 2024 can be found on the Times website. Why Winchester's Christmas market is among the best for 2024? Winchester Cathedral's Christmas market was praised by the Times as the best for filling up with festive food. Features that were commended including the twinkling lights and traditional chalets.
Charity offers support at times of bereavement. A charity is urging people to talk about death in order to help come to terms with their loss. Winchester Bereavement Support is a free-of-charge voluntary organisation that supports people in the city and surrounding areas with their grief. Anne Jones, 73, from Kingsworthy, is a bereavement visitor. She took up the role after retiring from nursing after 45 years. She spoke out about her role and the charity in order to promote its good work ahead of National Grief Awareness Week, which runs from December the 2nd to the 8th. Anne said, "I wanted to continue supporting grieving families and friends that needed so much help. WBS gave me the opportunity, so I'm glad they did. A positive, caring, professional charity that goes the extra mile." The service was established in 1982 and has been growing ever since and currently has 42 volunteers. Anne said, "The current team has contributed to 277 years of combined service. As soon as I mention that I'm a member of the bereavement team, there is an instant element of trust." Anne has struggled with bereavement herself, finding it tough when her mother died 6 years ago in difficult circumstances. She now uses her personal experience to help others. She said, "I provide informal, individual, one-to-one sessions and hospice group sessions, providing a safe, welcoming and supportive place for people who have been bereaved to share their experiences of grief. Bereavement volunteers help people who are grieving in many ways, including emotional support. We provide a safe space to talk about feelings and how someone is coping. We help develop coping strategies using skills to help people understand and develop strategies to cope. We also signpost the other services and support services that may be available." Anne said that it can be difficult, but talking really does help. People can be so closed about expressing things, she said. "It's often easier to talk about death of a loved one with someone who can be objective and not related to the deceased or you. When I visit or call a bereaved person, it often helps that we don't know each other. There is no fear of being judged, no subconscious worry on their part about what can be discussed. It's important to understand that grief is not a single emotion. It's an experience or state of being that affects you physically, emotionally and mentally and spiritually." And there is a small picture of the WBS stand. I think it was probably at Littleton Fair. And there's a picture of Anne Jones standing there beside the banner.
Care Homes free offer to emergency workers. A Winchester care home is offering free food and drink to emergency service workers. Flower Down Care Home in Hairstock Road has opened its doors to paramedics, nurses, police officers and other emergency service staff. The care home will provide free food and drink to all emergency service staff, who do not have time to go home or get back to their workplace during their break. Claudia Nuns, general manager of Flower Down Care Home, said, "It's to say thank you to all of the great work, or for all of the great work our emergency services do for us. We here at Flower Down Care Home are inviting all members of the police, ambulance and fire services to pop in and take their duty break on us for free. We are pleased to offer all of our local service workers who stop in tea, coffee, juice, chilled water, delicious homemade cake and biscuits, and a healthy selection of fruit available free of charge. Our comfortable facilities include free Wi-Fi and service with a smile. Do stop in and say hi. We would be delighted to see you." And Flower Down Care Home is run by Barchester Healthcare, one of the UK's largest care providers, which is committed to delivering personalised care across its care homes and hospitals.
And this one had a daycare service for dogs celebrates first 10 years. A dog daycare and walking service is celebrating 10 years of serving Hampshire furry friends. Now you've got to listen carefully to this. It's called Centre Barks, spelt S-C-E-N-T-E-R, Barks, B-A-R-K-S. It's the most brilliant name. Founded in 2014, has become a go-to for dog owners who need somewhere safe for their pets to stay while they're at work or otherwise engaged. The business offers a range of services, including daycare, dog walks, enrichment activities, and special events such as summer fetes and Easter egg hunts. Co-founder Nikki Roberts said, "We're so proud to have reached this milestone. What started as a small idea in the pub that no one in our area was yet doing has grown into something we'd only imagined. We couldn't have done it without our clients and their incredible dogs. Their trust and loyalty mean the world to us, and we're grateful for every dog that walks through our doors. The business has always had a focus on providing a safe and fun environment for dogs to play and relax. This has led them to create tailored enrichment programs designed to stimulate dogs mentally and physically." Lucy Lloyd added, "We believe that every dog deserves to be happy, engaged, and treated with kindness. Over the years, we've seen firsthand how much enrichment and socialization can improve a dog's well-being, and that's why we're constantly evolving our programs to ensure we're giving the very best care possible. The business is now looking forward to the future and is planning to continue their high standard of care, offer more enrichment options, and even provide an online course for future entrepreneurs who are looking to become experts in the dog care world." Ms. Lloyd added, "We're excited about the next chapter. The past 10 years have been wonderful, and we're looking forward to continuing to provide top-notch care and to growing alongside our amazing community. As part of their anniversary celebration, Centre Barks is hosting a birthday party to thank their clients and the wider community for their ongoing support. The event will include cake for humans and dogs, a glass to toast, a decade of success, and some activities for the dogs to take part in. For more information on Centre Barks, visit their website, www.centrebarks.co.uk.
Sounds lovely. I almost wish I was a dog. Air ambulance could help you save lives. An air ambulance service is appealing for volunteers to help save lives. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance is looking for volunteers to take its CPR Skills for Life programme into businesses, schools, clubs and other groups. The initiative has already seen more than 400 people take part in the free sessions within the first few weeks, and interest is growing. Keith Wilson, the charity's Director of Income and Engagement, said, "A cardiac arrest can happen to anyone, anywhere at any time. Whether it's a loved one in your home or a stranger in a shopping centre, we want to empower people to set up and perform CPR to give that person the best chance of surviving. It's incredibly exciting to offer our existing and prospective volunteers the opportunity to donate their time spearheading this potentially life-saving program. The charity is urging those who want to help to sign up online. Volunteers for the programme will be given the necessary tools, training and support to help inspire others to become potential lifesavers. For more information on how to get involved, visit hiowaa.org/volunteer. I'll repeat that, hiowaa.org/volunteer.
A church group evicts mother. A single mother has been handed an eviction notice after the organisation that houses her decided to sell up. The Bournemouth Churches Housing Association, which owns a number of properties in and around Winchester, provided Meadow Hope and her young daughter with a house on Fraser Road, Kingsworthy, in May 2018. However, without warning, the BCHA tried to kick them out with a Section 21 no-fault eviction notice in June, so it could put the property on the market. On top of this, Meadow and her daughter, who the BCHA moved into the house from Bournemouth, have had issues with the property throughout their time there, and which she says were never resolved in spite of her numerous complaints. Meadow, originally from Malawi, said, "We didn't have hot water for 3 years, and my daughter's bedroom didn't have heating for a while. Workers came, but they didn't fix the problems, they just left." She spoke to a BCHA manager, Esther Goodbear, who reassured her, telling her that she was owed compensation for what happened. But as Meadow said, instead they gave us the eviction notice. This comes as the BCHA carries out a campaign of asset stripping in Winchester. The charitable organisation has sold at least 4 properties worth over £2 million in the city so far, which were originally bought by Winchester-based charity Keystone to combat issues with homelessness decades ago. Keystone had originally sought out a merger with the BCHA after having struggled to survive as a smaller enterprise for years. However, in what has been described as an appalling breach of faith, the BCHA has opted to start shutting up shop in Winchester in order to focus its energies elsewhere. In response to Meadow's plight, the BCHA said, "A review of the properties in BCHA's ownership within the Winchester City Council area has been carried out, and the strategic decision of selling these properties was made earlier this year. This decision was based solely on BCHA's future direction, which involves reducing our geographical spread of properties. It was not informed of localized issues raised by our customers. Any issues raised from our customer in this instance were resolved and supported separately."
Restraining order for stalker. A Sparshield man has been slapped with a restraining order for stalking a woman for almost 3 months. Thomas Tilbury, 34, of Bostock Close, stalked a woman between Sunday, May the 26th and Thursday, August the 22nd, a court heard. This included messaging the woman on Facebook and leaving a gift bag outside her home. On Friday, August the 28th, Tilbury pleaded guilty to the offence at Basingstoke Magistrates Court. On Wednesday, October the 23rd, a restraining order was issued, preventing him from contacting the woman either directly or indirectly. The order is in effect until October the 22nd, 2026. Tilbury was also given a community order. He must comply with any instructions of the responsible officer to attend appointments with the responsible officer or someone else nominated by them, or to participate in any activity as required by the responsible officer up to a maximum of 30 days. He must also do 120 hours worth of unpaid work within 12 months. Tilbury must also pay £114 victim surcharge and costs of £85. The total amount of £199 must be paid in full by November the 20th.
Community Anniversary Celebration. Week Community Centre has celebrated its 70th anniversary with a special celebration. The community centre in Taplin's Road was built in 1954 to serve the new estate of Week and later Hairstock. The celebration was held on Saturday, October the 19th. The day started with an afternoon tea for invited guests catered for by Munch CIC. Those in attendance included the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Russell Gordon-Smith, were then treated to performances by the Spitfire Sisters and the students from Winchester Theatre Arts. Celebration continued into the evening with a members-only party for the social club, also based at the community centre. The evening saw a casino, a magician and a complimentary buffet and a disco. Centre manager Jenny Robertson said, "It's been a lovely to celebrate 70 years of the community centre and we are grateful for the local community for continuing to support us. The centre has seen many changes during its life, but it still remains very much the centre of the community. We have two halls available for hire and host many events open to the general public, including our weekly bingo on Tuesday evening and our upcoming comedy night on Friday, November the 15th. For more information on the community centre or to inquire about hiring the hall as a function, visit www.weekcommunitycentre.co.uk.
Former reporter tells of heart-stopping trauma. A former Hampshire Chronicle journalist is the subject of a new one-off BBC documentary shedding light on cardiac arrest. Clive Hammond, who was a reporter at the Hampshire Chronicle and also worked for the Southern Daily Echo, Basingstoke Gazette, Andover Advertiser and the Romsey Advertiser, spoke about his terrifying experience when his heart stopped beating, aged just 31. Rebirth, a Radio 4 documentary, looks into what happens in those potentially life-ending moments when the body goes into cardiac arrest. It follows Clive, a journalist and a cardiac arrest survivor, as he attempts to piece together what happened during his own experience suffering a cardiac arrest, an event where a person's heart suddenly stops pumping blood around the body. On October the 11th, 2021, Clive, who is originally from Southampton but now lives in London, suffered an inpatient cardiac arrest at Lewisham Hospital. Since then, Clive has been on a mission to understand exactly what the body goes through during an arrest, how it can survive after the heart has stopped, and what support there is out there for people. I can only remember small 15 or 20 second snapshots of the days building up to my cardiac arrest, Clive said. Like so many survivors, I have found acceptance of the new reality of life after a cardiac arrest, and the challenges this may bring, a heavy burden, a feeling that is sadly shared with others across the country. Having an arrest in your 30s is rare, and finding those around me that have experienced a similar trauma was one of the biggest motivations behind piecing together my own journey and sharing it. The documentary was also really important to try and show other people from my generation that having a cardiac arrest so young will transform your life, but it doesn't have to define you. During the 30-minute documentary, Clive meets people who share their own experiences. Among the interviewees is Clive's wife, Victoria, who helps him understand what happened during his four-day coma, and Meg, a student who had her own cardiac arrest, which had life-altering consequences. Survival rates in cases of cardiac arrest can make for difficult reading. The British Heart Foundation says if someone has a cardiac arrest outside the hospital, only 1 in 10 people survive. Each year, there are more than 30,000 incidents of this occurring in the UK, with thousands more cardiac arrests taking place inside hospitals.
Trek from Plymouth in aid of Samaritans. A Winchester volunteer has walked 300 miles to raise money for charity. K Kevin White, 64, volunteer listener for Winchester Samaritans, started his walk in Plymouth on September the 14th and reached Winchester on October the 1st. During his journey, Mr. White visited four other Samaritan branches, including Plymouth, Torquay, Weymouth and Salisbury. He started on Plymouth Hoe and followed the southwest coast path to Poole, turning inland along the River Avon to Salisbury, and then taking the Clarendon Way home to Winchester. Mr. White started volunteering with the Samaritans after one of his daughter's closest friends took her own life at the age of 17. He said being there without judgment for those who are struggling to reach out by offering the simple act of listening is one of the most powerful things I can give back to the world. Many donors and businesses in the area have generously contributed to Winchester Samaritans. These include Seafair, Kingsworthy Foundry, Winchester Coffee Roasters, Elliot's, JCM Glazing, Remedy Health, and Revolution Physiotherapy. To make a donation to Mr. White's walk, visit his Just Giving page. Samaritans provide emotional support to people in distress or at risk of suicide through confidential helplines and services. The volunteer listeners of the Samaritans are available to provide emotional support to anyone who needs it across the UK 24 hours a day, every day. Over the last 70 years, its volunteers have answered more than 134 million calls for help. The Samaritans can be reached by calling 116 123, which is free phone, 116 123, and there's a picture of Kevin White at his starting point at Plymouth Hoe with his walking poles and his backpacks by the sea with the rocks and the beach until he walked all his way to Winchester. Well on him. Good on him.
Leader of the Council warns Chancellor. The leader of Hampshire County Council has warned the Chancellor that local authorities across the country could fall unless legislation reforms how they operate and how decisions are made. In a letter to Rachel Reeves, Nick Adams-King added that it won't be the council's fault if they don't succeed and overcome the financial deficit. It will be the government's fault if it does not grasp the nettle and recognise how local authorities are funded and is often not fit for purpose. Hampshire County Council recently made cuts to spending. It is facing a recurring deficit of £175 million, which could even increase in the following year due to the lack of government funding and the increased demand of social care and SEND education. It is said that the council won't be able to balance the books only from savings. It said a cash injection, as well as a reform of adult and children's social care and SEND provision, alongside the Hampshire devolution deal, allow the council to decide how to raise and spend money will help. In the letter to Rachel Reeves, Councillor Adams-King said that the way councils are told to operate by the government and how they have stopped from raising money is leading them to plunging into the red. He said that although the time is short, the administration aims to work with ministers on how to proceed. Councillor Adams-King said, like many local authorities across the country, Hampshire County Council is now operating under significant financial strain. I fully recognise that resources are not unlimited. Reform is thus vital to helping reduce financial pressures on local authorities, and it is exploring opportunities for greater local decision-making. More centralisation will do nothing but further harm our finances. I passionately believe Hampshire County Council needs to be able to take more decisions locally. Doing so would allow us to be far more entrepreneurial and allow us to direct our resources to the right places as the need arises, without the need to meet centrally allocated budget heads or employ people in inefficient ways.
Students design app to bring the cathedral alive. Students from the University of Winchester have designed an app to improve visitor experiences at the city's cathedral. In response to growing visitor demand for more engaging and interactive experiences, the project aimed to integrate modern technologies such as augmented reality, AR, and virtual reality, VR, while preserving the cathedral's historical essence. A total of 62 second-year students spread across various digital technologies programs took on the task. Working in 13 teams, they acted as innovation consultants, presenting proposals to the cathedral marketing manager, Lauren Bolter Booth. The presentations outlined a comprehensive project plan, detailing key app features, what software would be required, and a timescale for the project. Security and data protection measures, as well as a disaster recovery strategy, were also integral components of the proposals. Ms. Bolter Booth said, "Many students have gone above and beyond, having visited Winchester Cathedral to take photos, gather details, draw maps, record videos, all in the spirit of creating the best app." The winning team, Group 5, had created an extremely impressive app, including features such as virtual choir, navigated tours, AR camera feature, and more, communicating this with the utmost professionalism in their well-rehearsed presentation. Group 5, consisting of Tyler Moore, Ronnie Shen, Joshua Glover, and Alexandra Hillico, recently received their winner's certificates from Ms. Bolter Booth during her visit to the university's West Down Centre. Dr. Sabine Bonacker-Bruce, who leads collaborative projects between the Faculty of Business and Digital Technologies and Winchester Cathedral, highlighted the mutual benefits of such collaborations. She stated, "We work with our external partners to give students opportunities to tackle real-life issues and projects and to develop their professional skills. At the same time, our partners profit from students' fresh perspectives and ideas. These collaborations are usually beneficial, are mutually beneficial, and are always keen to work with, and we are always keen to work with local and regional partners." And this is accompanied by a photograph of the winning team, flanked by various members. They're flanked by the cathedral marketing manager, Lauren Bolter Booth. And on the other side, we have Dr. Sabine Bonacker-Bruce. And they're all looking very proud and holding their winner's certificate.
Residents advised to be prepared for flooding. The Environment Agency has warned Wessex communities to be ready for floods. This comes as part of the nationwide Flood Action Week that ran from October 14 to 20. The awareness campaign also marks the one-year anniversary of Storm Babet, which caused significant flooding across the country. With climate change resulting in more extreme weather, flooding has already been recorded this autumn. This follows the wettest 18 months on record in England up to February 2024. The Environment Agency aims to show people how they can reduce the damage floods cause to their homes and businesses, with around 5.5 million properties in England at risk from flooding. Ron Curtis, the Environment Agency's Flood and Coastal Risk Manager for Wessex, said, "Our field teams are active all year, preparing for and responding to flooding and working with at-risk communities. But even with these efforts, we can't prevent flooding completely." Mr. Curtis stressed the importance of being prepared, saying, "As we anticipate more intense rainfall this winter, it's essential you take the necessary precautions to safeguard yourself and your family from flooding as much as possible. The agency advises people to sign up to flood warnings and take steps to protect themselves from future flooding, such as storing important documents in a secure, waterproof location and preparing a flood kit."
Butchers shave heads to support PAL. Four butchers in Stockbridge have shaved their heads in support of a colleague who has recently been diagnosed with blood cancer. The men, who all work at John Robinson's Butchers on the town's high street, hatched the plan in a pub on Friday evening after work. James Robinson explained, "We know our friend will probably lose all his hair when he starts chemotherapy, so we just thought, let's shave our heads in solidarity." James said their colleague was emotional when he found out. "Although he knows we're all good mates," he said, "our support brought tears to his eye." The team has also raised £1,000 in the first 3 days of their fundraising appeal on behalf of the Macmillan Cancer Support. James said, "We had so many incredible messages online, as well as customers who've not only donated but have shared stories about cancer, whether it is personal story or advice. We've been really touched." And you can donate at John Robinson Family Butchers Facebook page or at the shop. And there is a lovely picture of the four men, Dean, Luke, James and Hayden, and they're standing there in their blue and white striped aprons with their arms folded, and they're all wearing collar and tie and white jackets and very bald, obviously, and all smiling cheerfully. It's a lovely, lovely picture.
Diamond Day as loving couple defy doubters. So a couple who married in 1964 are celebrating their 60th wedding anniversary in advance, proving those who doubted them wrong. Mick Vacher, age 77, and June Rawlins, age 76, from Compton and Twyford, met Riverside at Twyford Lock in 1961, now known as Compton Lock. Mick said it was love at first sight when he first saw his future wife. He attended the Secondary Modern Boys' School in Romsey Road and was in the 4th and 5th TA Battalion at Newburgh House, Winchester. And June went to Compton Church of England Junior School. "We lived a mile apart from each other," said June. They married on November the 7th, 1964, at Winchester Registry Office. They have fond memories of the day and how young they were, and they said the weather was drizzly, but apart from that, it was a wonderful day. "I remember a very silly hat I bought," said June. Friends took the wedding photos, and each photo had the case of the camera in it. Only a few of them were fine. Mick was 17 and June was 16 when they married, and people said, "It won't last." But the couple decided to stick together to prove them wrong. They lived in Chandler's Ford, Highfield, Southampton, West End and Bitton before they moved to Oliver's Battery when they retired in 2007, with Mick retiring from his job as a safety officer at the National Grid. To celebrate their anniversary, Mick and June are travelling to Spain to stay with their daughter for a month, and they are looking forward to relaxing and hopefully some warmer weather. And what's their secret to a long and happy marriage? "Tolerance and understanding are important on both sides," says Mick. "It's give and take. Be happy. Life is too short, and sparing time for yourselves is key." And there are three pictures of them. There's pictures of them in the 1960s, and they both look very, very young. She was 16 when she married, and he was just 17. And they both had a lot of hair, and then there are pictures of them now, and congratulations to them. Well done.
Absolutely.
Well done.
Absolutely.
Ukrainian musicians delight audience. A pair of Ukrainian musicians have captivated a Winchester audience with an eclectic concert. Soprano Katerina Balkonevich and pianist Lilia Solomonova performed on the evening of Saturday, October the 26th, marking World Opera Day, with the second instalment of their ongoing series of concerts in Winchester. The programme, entitled From Mystical Lakes to the Fiery Streets of Seville, wove together works by Bizet, Saint-Saëns and Dvořák, along with a number of Ukrainian compositions. The concert setting was St Paul's Church in full flood, where the musicians also put on their first Winchester concert in July. A standout moment was Kyriakos Mavka's aria, based on the same poetic play, familiar to younger audiences from the recent animated fantasy film Mavka, The Forest Song. The concert was sponsored by the Winchester Round Table Association, and as a photograph of the two girls in their lovely long dresses, one very dark blue or black and pink, the other one, and bunches of wonderful flowers and roses, both obviously so happy and pleased having done this obviously wonderful concert.
Rotarians out in force to plant bulbs for Polio Day. Members of Winchester Rotary were out in full force to plant new crocus flowers around the King Alfred statue for World Polio Day. The flowers were first planted around the statue at the bottom of Winchester High Street at the suggestion of Rotary member Jill Russell. Jill said, "I got the idea from Stratford-on-Avon Rotary Club having planted crocuses around their statue of Shakespeare. I sent it to the City Council and said, 'What about King Alfred?' And that was 4 years ago, which was the first time we did, and they needed renewing." New club members went to renew the crocus on Saturday, October the 26th, and plant bulbs in other parts of the city. Rotary President Paul Russell told the Chronicle that the club would be planting 4,000 crocus bulbs across the three sites in the city centre, by King Alfred, in the Abbey Gardens and the Cathedral Close. When asked about the amount of people who had shown up to help plant the bulbs, he said, "It's very encouraging. We're just the Winchester Rotary Club. Alsford Rotary Club did the planting as well, and they did theirs on Thursday, October the 24th. It's all through the country that people are doing this, either on World Polio Day or the nearest Saturday." And there's a picture of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 people all dressed sensibly at the bottom of King Alfred's statue.
Now, the team know that if there's an article that features old buses, or steam trains in particular, that I am going to read it. And it's no good Nicky falling asleep. And this combines everything that I think is fantastic. Vintage fine dining on the Watercress Bell. It's even impressed Nicky. Right. How lucky we are to have a special heritage railway on our doorsteps. The Watercress Line, also known as the Midhants Railway, runs from Alsford to Alton. It is run by a huge team of dedicated volunteers, and it often holds wonderful events throughout the year. Thomas is a hit for families. There's the Real Ale Train for those looking for some fun. The Illuminations at Christmas spread a festive touch, and the Nostalgia Running Days really showcase the hard work and love that's poured into keeping the line operational. However, for a few nights a year, it runs luxurious fine dining experiences in its first-class carriages on board the Watercress Bell, offering a blend of nostalgia and gourmet cuisine. The 70-year-old restored train exudes an old-world charm with richly upholstered seats, wooden interiors, and an intimate, cozy atmosphere. We were served three courses, all crafted with seasonal, locally sourced ingredients, ensuring freshness and a delightful array of flavours. The culinary team, Lemonstone Events, had thoughtfully designed a menu that paired contemporary cuisine with the vintage charm of the setting. The service was impeccable, with attentive staff ensuring that every need is met without being intrusive. The wine flowed, and the meal was complemented by the attention to detail in the decor. White damask tablecloths, carefully arranged curtains, and cozy lamps that gave a gentle glow, making the evening feel elegant and intimate. It is clear that the experience is designed to transport you not just physically, but emotionally, creating a timeless journey through the senses. and I missed it. How did I manage to do that? But never mind. This is accompanied by some photographs. There's Kimberly Barber, who wrote this article, photograph of her on the platform at Alsford, waiting to board the train. And, dear, dear, it's not at all like Southwest trains, is it?
Church's starting point for pilgrimage. St. Bartholomew's Church is now the official starting point for the Winchester to Southampton leg of the Camino Inglés. The Camino Inglés begins at Reading Abbey and continues to God's House Tower in Southampton, a route believed to have been taken by medieval English pilgrims heading to Santiago de Compostela in Spain. For those starting from Winchester, St. Bartholomew's Church is now the official starting point. Winchester has been a significant location for pilgrims since the Middle Ages. St. Bartholomew's Church, founded in 1110 within Hyde Abbey, also attracted pilgrims visiting the final resting place of King Alfred the Great, or venerating the cult of St. Barnabas or the shrine of St. Jossi. Pilgrimage has seen a resurgence in recent years, offering a chance to escape daily stresses and engage with the natural world. And there is a picture of a group about to set off with their boots and walking sticks and backpacks and smiling in the sun. Lucky them, not raining.
Partnership aims to tackle business crime. A new partnership has been launched to tackle business crime in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. Police and Crime Commissioner, PCC, Donna Jones, announced the establishment of the Business Crime Partnership, aiming to reduce crime impacting businesses and the communities they serve. The initiative aims to unite businesses, professional organisations and the police and public sector agencies. The partnership, chaired by Ms Jones, was set in motion at John Lewis in West Quay Shopping Centre in Southampton. The members have pledged to work together to find effective solutions to business crime, in line with Ms Jones' ambition to identify, prevent and tackle all forms of crime affecting businesses. Ms Jones says, "As Commissioner, I am a voice for the thousands of businesses. As their representative, it is my duty to understand their crime concerns and ensure they receive a robust policing response." She also highlighted the issue of shoplifting, stating, "Shoplifting makes people feel really unsafe in their communities, and it's often linked to serious and organised crime, putting businesses and livelihoods at risk. The Chief Constable and I share a zero-tolerance approach to retail crime." The partnership's launch coincided with the Safer Business Action Week run by the National Business Crime Centre, NBCC. This week focuses on engaging with businesses, identifying and catching suspects, crime prevention and raising awareness. Ms Jones says, "Every year businesses are victims of crime, including shoplifting, fraud, scams and theft. Added into the mix are prolific offenders and organised crime gangs who steal to order." And there is a picture of all of them with PCC Donna Jones in the centre, with all the New Hampshire and Isle of Wight Business Crime Partnership people.
Pride as graduates are honoured at the cathedral. Winchester has been a hive of activity this week as students graduated, with ceremonies taking place at Winchester Cathedral. Today was the final day of graduation ceremonies for the University of Winchester students. Through the sea of caps and gowns, thousands of students from various courses came together to celebrate this milestone. Today's students included those from acting, journalism, film studies, theatre production, and more. And those from crime, law business, and other courses had their turns the last couple of days. "I give my course a 9 out of 10, a perfect score," said Ellie. She also added, "It was brilliant, the course, and it was beautiful, the ceremony. Everyone was so happy and excited, and it was just really lovely. It was lovely, and I had a great time and was smiling the entire time," said Ellie. Film and writing graduate Shona Collins of 2023 Burnham Soldiers, how she had enjoyed her course. Same with the guys, with one of them saying, "It was really good. A lot of hard work, a lot of stress, but it paid off in the end. And this is accompanied by a couple of photographs of some of the students, resplendent in their gowns and caps outside the cathedral, and holding up their graduation certificates.
Artist's Christmas card will help support families. A family support charity has teamed up with a well-known artist to create a special Christmas card. Homestart, Winchester and Districts has collaborated with artist and teacher Daphne Vaughan to produce this year's card titled Santa Has Lost His Sleigh. Daphne founded the charity Know Thyself after the death of her son and now helps people overcome stress and anxiety in the workplace. She said, Tom's death was an enormous shock to all who knew him. He was much loved, very successful and an inspirational networker. We work across the UK to raise funds for our partner charities, as well as raising awareness of mental health issues ourselves. Homestart Winchester recently highlighted the levels of stress, depression and loneliness felt by young parents. There's a lovely picture of the Homestart Winchester trustee, Chrissy Barlow, who I've sort of dealt with, and artist Daphne Vaughan showing off this charity card. Obviously, it was the big size, which will be reduced, because you wouldn't want to send this. It's about the size of a blackboard. and it's been crossed out where you can get it from, but all the usual places in Winchester where you can get Christmas cards, you'll be able to get it in the support of a very good charity.
Thank you. And thank you. That concludes our extracts for this week. So thanks to our editors for selecting the pieces we've read, and to the copying and memory stick reparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.